Reemployability.
Season 3.
Google says that disillusionment is a feeling of disappointment resulting from the discovery that something is not as good as one believed it to be. Are you disillusioned about anything? Have you ever been? The word carries, I think, a negative connotation, like once you're disillusioned, that's it, end of story. But that's not necessarily the case, because disillusionment can actually lead to an understanding of perspective and to growth and resilience. This week, we finish our conversation with Mike May, a new account manager at Reemployability, an Army veteran who served in the global war on terrorism in Afghanistan. If you didn't hear part one, I think it'd be good to go back and give that one a listen. It'll help put this part into context. We're going to be talking about what's helping him continue to reacclimate himself to civilian life. I asked Mike about the desire he had to be of service and if that was part of the process for him and other veterans. That's where we start out today.
Is that something that you really think would drive you? And do you think that's something that drives other veterans?
I do. I don't think they realize that that's what it is. I think that that's like kind of like this sappy side to it where they'd rather be like, oh, I do it for the boys, you know, I do it for my country. But really, I just think that like me and a lot of us just really love to help, whether that's teaching someone or mentoring someone or sharing our mistakes so it prevents other people from making them. I think a lot of that is just people, they want to feel utilized. And the Army really forced you to do that. So that's just, like I said, it's just a hard void to fill when you go back to the civilian world because most employers don't do mentoring, right? They don't do counseling. Well, we would have quarterly counseling, where it's like, this is what I want, this is where you're going to be, you know, and then you're like, oh, we're going to do an annual counseling, and then, you know, so you kind of like, man, maybe it wasn't so bad. So then there's a little bit of the regret. So I think all of those motions kind of like bubble up over time, and we weren't given any treat like counselors. There were no like, hey, it's okay, or like, we were all just, no, I'm good, you know.
Well, I was going to say, I bet if in certain moments, if a counselor was offered to you,
we wouldn't
have
used it.
Like,
yeah, I'm good.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I'm not in that situation, and sometimes I feel the same way.
Right. Like, I don't need that, you know, yeah.
I hear you.
So, I mean, that was kind of the thing that really kind of set the tone for the deployment. And then from there, we all realized that, like, okay, this is like, there's people trying to kill us,
yeah,
right? And we need to be... We can't let ourselves get complacent, and I think a lot of us like grew together as a unit, and that like really bonded us together, and then we were able to all make it back. So,
were there any good stories while you were deployed? You mentioned wanting to help people. Right? Were there ever that, you know, I read about the American soldiers giving out candy to kids in Germany in World War II, right?
Yeah,
were there any situations like that?
For sure. So, I don't know if you've heard of COIN, his counterinsurgency. So I think that was David Petraeus, General Petraeus' model. So in the beginning of the global war on terrorism, it was all about just kill the Taliban. If we kill the Taliban, they won't be able to fight us. But for every one we killed, three more spawned. So then we pivoted to this counterinsurgency model where we would go into towns and we would give them, like you said, books, coloring books for the kids, backpacks, we'd give them rice, we'd give them money, we would hook, like, try to fix their mosque, and build wells, and have provincial reconstruction teams that were just designed to build infrastructure and schools and things. And a lot of that, like, I think made us feel like it looks good, you know, like CBS News came out and like did a whole story on our platoon, on our company. And it was just to the point where like a lot of us were already kind of in that like, yeah, right, you know, type thing. And the caveat a lot of there is the village elder would steal all the money and make his house nice and not give any, or they would take the money and say the Taliban took it when they didn't. And so there was a lot of things that kind of like burst your bubble, you know? So like, I will say that the good stories tend to just be the ones where like we all made it back type things, you know, like we tried our best, you know, we did what we had to do, but at the end of the day, like your mentality is how many days left are on the deployment. You know, like there's a saying, it's better to be tried by 12 than carried by 6. So if you're thinking, man, am I following the ROE? Am I, and bam, you know, like, so just react and then we'll cross that bridge later. You know, so the support that you get from your unit command, as far as like, these guys are in the trenches, that was the decision, they pulled the trigger, let's not punish the soldier for, you know, reacting, right? So that I think made us feel a little bit better, as far as like, we did have the support from our higher ups. I will say that that's probably one of the most uncommon things. Like, you've heard of Bo Bergdahl, where he walks off the base and and his whole spiel is, oh, my unit was all ate up, no one was, you know, helping us, no one was looking out for us, so I wanted to go and blow the whistle, right? And I'm fortunate enough to say that I never felt that. Like I said, that day we got hit by the IED, that next day we had another $1 million MRAP signed for and ready to go. So I never felt like we didn't have the support of our chain of command or our first line supervisor, you know, all of that was clear that, you know, the mission is to get back. Mm-hmm. So I think like that kind of like spoils a little bit of what you can do for the folks in the country. Mm-hmm. Because when we were there in 2009, it was an election year for Afghanistan. Like, they had their presidential election to reelect Hamid Karzai as their president. So we did a lot of poll security. We would sit on the hill and we would pull security to make sure that the polls weren't attacked and that people could vote. So there was our, you know, like, we were able to, in that short time frame, have a democracy. And I think that's what a lot of people felt like we were making inroads. Mm-hmm. You know, they have a government, they have an army, like, at the end of my deployment, we were in Kabul training the Afghan army. We were doing their basic training. So we were showing them how to, you know, become soldiers. So I think a lot of us felt like we were, you know, making an impact on the country. Mm-hmm. And I think a lot of that, just as reality set in and time set in, there's an Afghan saying, the Americans have the watch, but the Taliban have the time. And it's true. Like, we have all the money and the resources, but they can just outweigh us. And that's what they did. And I think that was a hard year for a lot of us, when it kind of just like pulled out. And, you know, like, it is what it is. And it's not one person's idea, but like, it does kind of make like a lot of the Vietnam veterans feel like, what? Like, why did 10 of my buddies die on this hill for us to just get on the chopper and fly away and the NVA come and take it back the next day, you know? So I think we learned a lot of those lessons, but then we just really didn't follow through with it. So I know that a lot of like after that really had an impact on us. And then a lot of us had to deal with like folks who, like, I have just the same amount of people that I know were killed in combat in my unit that had committed suicide when we had gotten back. So like, that is also like a little bit of like the knife in and twist, you know, like, we made it back, but it's still impacting us. So I think a lot of us like have kind of are out of the woods, for lack of a better term, but it's, you know, something that took a long time for a lot of us to get through. I wouldn't say everyone has, but like I said, the two folks that I'm close with and that, you know, are in my fire team are people that did. And, you know, it was a lot of self figuring it out. Like,
I know that there's VA resources now.
Mm-hmm.
I imagine there's got to be private resources, like a bunch of you guys just get together and go out for a beer, right?
Oh, yeah. There's, you know, retreats and like those types of things, that support groups. But a lot of it is, it's a lot like the workers' comp, folks. Like, when you hear workers' comp, right, you think, oh, this person's malingering, they're just milking it, right? So That's what a lot of people who have their own issues still judge other soldiers with issues. Like, oh, he didn't go through what I went through, so he is, you know, his depression or anxiety isn't real like mine. So there's even that kind of like pitting one person against the other instead of us like kind of coalescing, saying, yeah, your experiences are different from mine, but we kind of still had the same traumatic effects from it. So I will say that there is like still a lot of stigma around kind of just like, I'm gonna go sit around a campfire with a bunch of guys in the Air Force and talk about how it was tough when they were, you know, sitting behind a desk flying a drone, you know, like, so there's still this kind of like macho, it like you are in the infantry, what did you expect type thing, right? So now I'm just gonna sit around and dwell on it and ruminate.
Yeah.
And that's not good either, you know. So a lot of it was just like bury it.
I know that there's some folks, some guys, again from my reading and things, mm-hmm. guys that come back from Vietnam who served in the same units, went through the exact same things together. One guy comes out and becomes an alcoholic and his whole life is ruined and maybe he commits suicide. The other guy opens up a business and makes $1 million.
Yeah, that's me and Mark. Like, Mark was the can't get right, you know, has too much to drink, gets in trouble, gets into fights, gets arrested type of stuff. And here I am, like, I'm going to college. I got my degree. I'm working. I bought a house. You know, I got married. Like, I have a fenced in back, you know, like I have the, like, so I always kind of felt like a little bit of like what you're saying is just like, you know, it could always, like, I'm not going to talk about myself because I got it made compared to what some of these other guys are going through just to get out of bed in the morning. So it, I think that's another thing too, is like kind of like I wouldn't say it's rationalizing it, but it's like minimizing your own stuff because there's always somebody who's got it worse than you. So I think once we all kind of understood that, like, there's kind of levels to it, that it really allowed us to, I think, like, feel a little bit better about doing things like this. Like, 5-10 years ago, I don't think I would have done this, right?
Yeah.
But I don't really see what good it does to just like not share.
Well, and you know, the thing is, man, some people, there may be somebody out there, and this is just
no,
a
yeah.
crazy way of thinking, but, you know, I think everything happens for a reason.
Mm-hmm.
And there could very well be the reason why you're working here is so we could meet to do this, so
totally.
You could record this, and somebody obscurely listens to it out
yeah.
of the blue, and is like, man, that guy is exactly... I'm going to try to talk to him
right.
or find somebody else or
right.
something. You never know what
yeah.
you do, how it's going to help people.
Mm-hmm.
And especially with, it seems like the way your attitude is since you've been here in the short time you've been here,
mm-hmm.
the desire to be helpful, you don't know how you're going
right.
to impact people. You don't know how what you say to an injured worker or
yeah.
Anybody or somebody just walking around here in
mm-hmm.
the office
yeah.
is going to impact them.
Right.
Right. Especially when they know your story.
Yeah.
But I completely understand how hard, I mean, I can't empathize with it, but I can
yeah.
do my best to understand how difficult it is.
Because
mm-hmm. I've not been through that, but I can think of many instances where I'd be like, screw you, I'm not telling you about this.
Right, right, yeah.
I'm going to push through it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I
yeah.
hear that. How has, other than kind of your desire to be helpful to
mm-hmm.
people, is there anything else through your experience that you feel like has made you a better person now than when you were 19 years old?
Yeah, I think that being able to like deal with adversity, I think is a big thing. That
tell me about that. What do you mean by that?
So like I said, when stuff happens overseas on deployment, when you're, you know, there was an evening where the Taliban like to attack at sunset and sunrise. I'm sure you've read that. And this is the dawn of time.
Yeah.
That's been the time to attack. The Indians did it. Everyone does it. And same with us. And we got ambushed. Wasn't really too long, too serious. And then they were like, all right, we're going to send you guys out right to where we just took contact from. So I always think about that. I'm like, man, if I could go outside the wire after that, like, I can do anything. Like, there isn't any situation where I'm going to feel like, oh, man, this is too much, or, like, how's it going to be, you know? So I think my resiliency towards just, I mean, like, adversity today pales in comparison to the adversity that we had to, that we were expected to overcome, and that it wasn't even like you had the option to be like, oh no, sorry, I'm too scared to go, or like, I don't really, you know. So I think like that's really made me able to, I think part of it is I kind of get a little annoyed by folks when they make a mountain out of a molehill. But then part of me steps back and says, you know, we're all not, you know, have these same experiences. But I will say that, like, that's another big thing. It's like adversity, hard times, you know, like those are the things that I just feel like I'm prepared for. And like, if I can do that, then I can stand up in front of a group and speak. You know, I can hop on a call with some folks I've never met and do something. I can learn a new skill. Like, I can be okay being vulnerable in a situation because, like, you know, whatever. Like, I mean, it doesn't matter.
It's about perspective.
Yeah, definitely gave me a lot of perspective. But I think that the that really, like, the resiliency and, like, realizing that, like, you know, it's everything now is like a walk in the park. So I think that was that's why I try to tell a lot of folks whose kids are interested in joining the military and stuff. It's like, I know it's scary, but like, I mean, you want a kid who can be, you know, have to worry about and be able to take care of themselves. Like, that's a great place for it because, you know, you have to learn how to get back on the horse and to pick yourself up. So that's really kind of like just put, like you said, put a lot of things in perspective. So I feel like I don't ever really feel awkward or uncomfortable or intimidated. I don't ever really feel like, and I think a lot of that too is kind of, it's like a balancing act, because sometimes like you can develop like a sense of hubris, right? Like you're invincible. And I think like some of those moments where the RPG lands right where you were just 2 seconds ago, you know, is like a reality check. So like, I think that that kind of also puts things in perspective for me to where like, yes, I can handle a lot, but that doesn't mean that like I can just go through life being an asshole and just, you know, like blowing people off or not giving a shit, because that's really like, that's not constructive either. And like, that's like a consequence of kind of going through that is sometimes you think like you're better than other people, or like you like oh, you don't know how it is, you know, like type stuff like that. So the perspective really allowed me, I think, to be proud of that, but at the same time like not let it, you know, kind of like dictate how I, you know, kind of went through life thinking stuff was owed to me. You know, there's a lot of entitlement when it comes to veterans. There's a lot of folks who think that, you know, that they deserve a lot of these things when really they don't. And that's a hard pill to swallow for a lot of folks. It's like, you're not special, you know, like no one cares. And I don't want to say that in a bad way, but I think a lot of times people want to say, oh, but I need special accommodation. You know, I need a special, you know, you don't know what I went through type thing. So I think the resiliency and the perspective, but also kind of like the humbleness of it too, because I mean, like, if it was up to me, like I said, I probably wouldn't be here. So I have to be humble enough to, you know, realize that you do need other folks to kind of keep you in line, or to at least, you know, be like a sounding board for things. So that's something that I've kind of carried with me.
If you're a veteran or know someone who is, know that there's assistance to help in reacclimating to civilian life. Retired Lieutenant Colonel Scott Mann is a close friend of reemployability, so I'm going to provide the website to his not-for-profit, The Hero's Journey, in the show notes. It's a great place to start, and I know that if this not-for-profit isn't the right one for you, the folks at The Hero's Journey will be happy to point you in the right direction. Thanks for listening, and we look forward to having you back in a few weeks.